It's time for She Says Art and He Says Science, your weekly hour of edutainment as you learn about the creative interaction between artists and scientists with your host, Jill Dittmeyer, a journalist and arts enthusiast, and Mark Kiesling, the founder and executive director of the Da Vinci Pursuit. The call-in phone number is 317-788-3314. Now it's time for She Says Art and He Says Science.
Hello, I'm Jill Dittmeyer, curious journalist and arts enthusiast.
And I'm Mark Kiesling, founder and executive director of the Da Vinci Pursuit, where we create a museum without walls so artists, scientists, and community can create unique interactions and conversations.
And that is what we are doing once again today. We are going to be talking about the art and science and a little bit of the history along the White River. And Mark, we have plenty of guests joining in our conversation today. Why don't you give them an introduction and start things off?
All right. We want to welcome back Kevin Hardy, who's the executive director of Friends of White River. Welcome, Kevin.
Glad to be here again.
Hi, Kevin.
And we're excited that Andrew Bradford, who's the vice president and chief development officer at Conner Prairie, can join us too.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
And Jim Viway, we've had you here,
mm-hmm.
Jim.
Yes.
And you're on the art and design faculty here.
Yes, at UND, yeah.
At UND. And I also have Nathan Foley, also on the faculty here.
Yes.
And you guys have just finished a series of kinetic sculptures?
Yes, so we did a series of kinetic sculptures in conjunction with the Indianapolis Arts Council and the Riverview Apartments. So we, Nathan and I created a series of kinetic fish sculptures, and it's actually four species of fish that live in the White River, and they're made out of stainless steel, and they're essentially swimming along the White River.
Oh, that's very cool. And which section of the White River are they in?
They are just south of Michigan Street along the White River.
Okay.
And so across from the new Riverview apartment complex. And so if you basically go, let's see, I guess it would be sort of north along White River Parkway from the Indianapolis Zoo and look over to the river, just as you get to the Riverview apartment complex, you'll see a line of, let's see, it was 12 fish along the White River. And they're all made of stainless steel and they're kind of abstracted. And then they will catch the light and reflect that because of the different planes. They will wiggle in the wind because they're hinged on posts. So, yeah.
So what complications did
you
run into?
Yeah, you had a lot to think about, Nathan, when you were putting that together.
That would be Nathan. He made
it.
There were several material concerns about, like, the weight and also the balance of them and figuring out how to be able to get them to stand in space effectively. So figuring out how, like, what or thickness the sheet metal needed to be, the diameter of the posts, making sure that we weren't going too heavy, that we weren't able to lift them in space because we had to actually manually lift them down there to be able to get them installed on their piers.
Wow.
And then also the engineering here on campus, the department assists us with getting the actual components, like the bearings, to be able to get them to go together and move fairly fluidly.
Are they actually in the water?
No, they're about 10 feet off of the is a White River Trail?
Yes.
Oh, good.
So there's a pathway that goes, so it's about 10 mm-hmm. feet off of that sidewalk, essentially.
Okay.
And Kevin, I'm sure they picked a spot where people will be able to see them and interact with them.
Absolutely. That's an area that's used in a variety of ways and is a bridge, if you will, between different segments of the river. I call the river a quilt, you know, so speaking in art terms, but it has a lot of different characteristics. And art brings people to things. We've certainly seen that in the case on other waterways, and it's certainly the case here with White River. Many of our cultural institutions are located right along it, if people haven't thought about that before.
And a real educational opportunity as well, because I'm guessing a lot of people didn't know there were 12 different kinds of fish in the White River, perhaps. Kind of news to me, honestly.
Yeah, there's even more than 12, actually. So there's a very wide range of species, but our feeling as a not-for-profit organization that's been around since 1985 is that anything that visually attracts people is going to make them appreciate that waterway more, and art is just one way of doing that, as is science.
Yeah, it's been really fascinating. At Conner Prairie, we've been partnering with the Indiana Department of Environmental Management to understand what fish and species are running through the waterways at Conner Prairie. We've got 3.3 miles of the river that run right through the property, and we were really excited to find that there were over 20 species of fish just in our 3.3 miles. And we've got to start thinking as a cultural institution that has such a responsibility to the land and really to the river to think about how is it that we're going to protect these species, and then how can we attract people to the river to raise awareness so that then they feel a sense of personal responsibility with their own actions to think about the cleanliness and the health of the river so that for generations to come we can all enjoy this.
Yeah, and both of you have been involved as a part of a project on Friends of the, or Partners for the White River, where we're trying to have one river, not counties, and that's a big change. So having Hamilton County and you guys anchoring that part of the river on down through Marion County, someday hopefully all of that White River will be as a part of what we do. But that's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, you've hit a key word there, Mark, which is the anchor mentality. And when we think about Partners for the White River and what the Nina Mason Pulliam Trust has done to bring a cohort of arts, culture, historical institutions, Friends of the White River, to say, what is it that we're going to do to protect this landscape? Well, we're excited to be on the northernmost end of that. But it's funny you should mention partnership and creating this one river feel. We were just with our friends at Newfields this afternoon, and we were talking about what could we accomplish if our messaging in Hamilton County mirrored that of what's going on in Marion County with the river, and talked about the influences you could have upstream on what's going on downstream. And the opportunity for collaboration there is just really fantastic to think about, you know, the 400,000 guests that Conner Prairie brings onto its grounds each year, and the hundreds of thousands of guests that Newfields brings on, and the power we could have from an educational perspective if we combined resources and found continuity in the message we were trying to deliver out to the public. It's really exciting.
Right, and then we add in Friends of the White River, who can get us on the water. That doesn't have to be reinvented by someone.
And I guess that's been our goal. We've kind of been at this for a while, and I think in a lot of ways we've helped others see the potential in that, whether they be individuals, whether they be organizations. But when we were formed in 1985, as I've heard it said, the community had its back turned on White River. I don't think that we've achieved the full embracement of it, if you will. And our goal is to not only have that term embracement come into play, but to have individuals, agencies, organizations, all give it a group hug, if you will. And we find that when people discover something, that's how you get them to that level. They need a positive experience, and all the different things that you can find up and down the river, not just one thing, but always different things, are really what offer that opportunity for people to value it.
And what are some of those success stories that you found, things that work?
In terms of, we let the river tell its own story. Mm-hmm. When we've taken people on tours, and Mark's been on one of the, more than one, actually, been a valuable crew member on some of them. But we like to listen when we do our activities. And in doing that, then we hear new ways to make that appeal to folks. In many instances, we've discovered that people who are involved with institutions that were right on the river really hadn't thought about it or weren't aware of it. And that's changed, obviously, as you've heard from Andrew. People are looking at it in terms of its future. We like to remind people of its history as well. And that means that we need to learn from not just the things that are going to be opportunities, but the things that have been challenges, even problems, even disasters in the past.
Yeah, and Kevin, when you're talking about that, you're hinting at each over and over again, learning, education. And what I love that the two of you are doing, Jim, with the fish, is that when we engage artists in that, we have a way of highlighting something that the people might not think about seeing. They see the beauty when they float with you, and when you, through interpretation, try to tell them. And that's only a part of the story. But if we have things where you call something out as an artist and make that much more visible, you are doing as much in teaching the science and the importance of the river as scientists is.
Oh, and that's one thing we try to do with these sculptures is remind people that there are creatures that live in there, and what they, you know, obviously the fish are very abstracted in a way that doesn't look exactly like it, but we tried to make sure that you could easily tell which species it was, that, you know, a bass looks like a bass and a catfish looks like a catfish. And then the other thing we did is that Nathan made plaque mounts on the post, so each species of fish, each sculpture that represents that species of fish has a plaque on there that tells something about its size, its environment, what it eats, and that sort of thing. So if people are willing to walk off the sidewalk a few feet, they can, you know, look at that plaque and find out what that fish does in the river.
Yeah, and I love that you're coming from two views. Mm-hmm. So you've got the walking view and the people that are on the shore, yeah. And then when we go out onto the water, we've got the water view, and it works both ways.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it would be, really cool to do more projects like this in different places along the river where we could give people a sense of what is happening in the river, what, species live in there, in a way that's just not so straightforward as saying, here's an illustration of a fish, mm-hmm. but do it in a little bit more artistic, interesting way that might grab people's attention, but still educate them on what's happening.
Because your process is just like Kevin's. You really need to listen to the public and see what they want and what works best for them. Where did you start your process in all of this, and how did you do your research, and did you do maquettes to see what would work and what wouldn't?
The project started a little bit before Nathan got here, because we were looking, we had this opportunity, but I didn't have a sculptor yet. And so we knew that we were in the process of finding one, and I knew that if we found the right person, it wouldn't be a problem at all. And of course we did, because I don't know that there's anything he can't make. So, having a partner like him is just, it just frees everything up. And so unfortunately for him, as we've moved on from the fish too, we keep having all these opportunities, and since he can make anything, then he's in trouble, because now we can do anything.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get you up to Connor Prairie.
Yeah.
Do some making. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where did you start, Nathan? When this was offered to you or told you you were going to do it, what was going through your mind? What'd you do?
It's just a natural part of the making process of just figuring out where to start. So we started with a drawing that Jim made of figuring out what fish existed in the river, and then figuring out how to be able to assemble them. So yes, we started with a maquette, using the laser cutter that we have in the department to be able to make small parts, to be able to then assemble those, and then be able to pitch our idea. So it was just the beginning stages of the entire process of being able to go and actually apply for this RFP, or this request for proposals. So we went out and pitched our idea, and obviously we got accepted to be able to do that, and then like I mentioned before, figuring out how to be able to actually assemble this thing. So how are we going to actually physically make it, and what's going to be used for it? We can't use wood. We have to use metal to be able to be permanent. Obviously, we need a long life on this thing. So
yeah, and as Connor Prairie comes online with a lot of this, you're used to doing it where you have a more controlled setting. But where you're going to go with the river, that becomes a less controlled environment. So you're going to enter into some new territory.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, we couldn't be more excited. And I go back to what Kevin was talking about in terms of the history of the river. You know, we think about Connor Prairie, and the reason it's there was the Lenape people, when they were forcibly removed and relocated, it was to this homestead. And then that followed by William Connor in the 1800s, when he established his trader settlement in 1801 at the site that is today Connor Prairie. And we've got to think about, how did he get there? How was he transporting himself from the east to the west? And it wasn't by 465, it wasn't by Allisonville Road, it was by the White River. And so we've got to think long and hard about the history of this river that it plays, and the reason that Connor Prairie gets to be such a unique historic place. It was the roadways, it was the front door. So often we have people come out for hearthside suppers, which is one of my favorite experiences, where you really get to step into the history and go into the Connor house and make a dinner as if you were preparing it with the Connors over the open hearth. You're churning the butter, you're making the bread, you're putting the cabbage together. This is all based off of receipts from the 1800s. But my favorite experience is as you arrive to the house, you actually arrive at the back door. And it's encouraged that you holler at the house, because in the 1800s, you would have approached from the river, not from this back door. And we all know in the 1800s, if you're approaching a house from the back door, you do not have good intentions. And so we encourage guests to announce themselves to make sure that the Connors don't come out in some sort of fire storm, right, and see who's approaching. But as we think about the river, we've got to incorporate these stories, and we've got to think about really the master plan of our site, right? The Connor Homestead is set up overlooking almost 300 acres of prairie land, and how can we activate new trails out there that are going to put people onto the river? They're going to turn them from looking at the prairie grass and simply do a 180 to look the other direction and see that the White River is right behind them, and what's the history and the story behind that. And our interpretive master planning will get us there, but it's a long road for us. When you've got 1,046 acres, you've got to be really intentional about what the guest experience might look like as they progress through time.
Yeah.
You need a lot of friends for the White River there, Kevin.
Absolutely. and we want people to discover the river, not just through those places that are a paid admission point, because there's a lot of places where there's readily available recreational access to the river. We're going to need to make sure, as some of this planning comes into play, that we balance the needs of the cultural institutions and those that have a more controlled environment with the amenities that have been provided to us. We don't have, and it's been said many times, and we've been saying it for years, we don't have oceans, we don't have mountains, we have a defining natural feature that is our river. And you know, one thing I hope I get to see up there that I know was discovered in the banks of Connor Prairie, and I think it's in storage, is actually a dugout canoe that was dug from beneath the banks.
That's
that goes
right
back to my newspaper days up in Hamilton County when I was just discovering White River. And Connor Prairie was a very different place. Things evolve as you go along the river, and we're seeing that with art, we're seeing that with science, we're seeing that with these collaborative efforts. And I think anything that brings people to a waterway has a potential for affecting them in a positive way, or sometimes seeing the negative things that can be learned about or still observed, with illegal dumping going on in some places in the river at some of our public access points in downtown Indianapolis is a learning opportunity.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought up that canoe. It is, in fact, my favorite part of the entire collection at the museum, and can definitely be a showcase when we think about the intersections between the river and art. And what can we do to teach from that historic piece? You know, we had folks who worked at Connor Prairie that tripped over that on the banks of the White River in 1965, and that canoe dates back to the late 1700s, early 1800s. And they used to bury the canoes in the banks of the river because that protected them from the changing elements of the weather around them. But it was a primary mode of both transport, but also a necessary. You know, when they're thinking about producing food for the family, they believe that canoe was one that they may have actually fished off of. And so it's reproduced out in the Lenape village, and the original sits downstairs in our vault. And I can't wait for the day when we have a quality building that will allow us to put those pieces on display for the public to see, to connect the stories of the river to the collections that we have, and then the reproductions that they're seeing out on the grounds.
I'd love to see the flatboat come back too. I helped move the flatboat going a number of years back when that was built. So there's art and science involved in the building of watercraft.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, and Connor Prairie tried to recreate that canoe actually at one point, but they decided to do all of the carving of the tree before they actually tested whether or not it floated. And for those of us who know anything about wood and water, there is an up to this. And so they had actually carved it out on the wrong side, and so we had a canoe that didn't float, which was whoopsie daisies, right?
But all art is mistakes as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully you guys didn't encounter any of that with the fish.
Art, science, and history of White River. That's our topic this afternoon. We're going to take a short break, and then we will be back with more.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hello again, I'm Joe Girard, your host for Inside Great American Music.
As you know by now, we're here every Sunday on the Diamond, 5 p.m. Eastern, 88.7 WICR. Our show revolves around the Great American Songbook. And this week, we present a series of four programs. Part one, with Ultimate Sinatra. It is recordings from 1939 to 1979. So join us this Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern as we listen to Sinatra, the beginning and the end, right here on 88.7 The Diamond, WICR.
No alarm clock. No traffic to negotiate. No staff meetings to attend. Sunday is your day, so do yourself a favor. Tune out all that noise and tune in for Sunday Baroque.
Sunday morning from 5 to 9 here on 88.7 WICR.
Rock and roll has evolved over the years from a sound that shaped the youth of a nation.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog, girl. You're crying all the time.
To an era that started a rebellion.
With a rebel, yeah. She cried more, more, more.
We're even bringing in a brand new generation. Every week on After Dark, we look through the songs and the stories that shaped rock and roll as we know it today.
After Dark, Sundays at 1 a.m. on 88.7 WICR.
And welcome back. I'm Jill Dittmeyer.
And I'm Mark Kiesling. And today we're talking about art, science, and history along the White River. And our guests are Kevin Hardy with Friends of White River, Andrew Bradford with Connor Prairie, and U of I art faculty Jim Viway and Nathan Foley. And when we left for our break, you began to talk about something that I think was extremely important and affects both the art and the other, and that is, Kevin, you're on that water a lot, and you understand that it changes. What complications does that create for an artist trying to create art in a watershed?
Well, it creates, I guess, not just complications, but sometimes challenges. You need to know the characteristic of the medium you're working within, whatever material that may be, stainless steel, but you also need to know things about the river in terms of its height, how of flood levels, how permanent a structure could be. Certainly, that's a very important thing to know. You also want to make sure that when art is placed, that it is in a way that it can be, I guess I'd use the term protected. We just had two pieces of artwork stolen from within White River State Park. Very, very intricate sculptures. And there was a lot of work done in terms of unfortunately dismantling those and taking them away. So you want people to see, but you don't want people to be able to become art thieves, if you will. And you want those places that we do draw people to be treated properly. That's why we say that a mix of public use with institutional use is going to be important in that regard. Not everyone can always afford to go to a place where you have to pay. We've got a new thing that'll help people, I think, discover White River, including if they're looking at doing sculptures and so forth. It's a redo of our app that can be downloaded. It's called the White River Guide, and it downloads from a smartphone. It'll map you to all kinds of locations, including Connor Prairie. We don't have the sculptures up there yet, but I'm going to see what I can do about that. And it'll give you directions and basic information about that. And it's available free and of no charge. Our premise is that when people come to something, use it in a positive fashion, then that makes sure that'll continue to happen and it'll continue to help it improve.
Yeah, and the river really, I think, Andrew, for you, the IMA, other large institutions, it has created a public access area that can't be confined and controlled and have an admission charge. Uh-huh. And yep. So in a way, that opens people to a new educational opportunity for both from the institution level, but for their own level.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have to embrace that. I mean, we're not going to stop people from accessing what we just happen to be the stewards of today. I mean, this land has been here and will continue to be here as long as we are good stewards of it and we take care of it and we get people to think about the impact that their daily lives has on the land and on the river. For us, we're looking at a new public-private trail system, both the private side, where we're going to have a lot more interpretation and in our staff, but then the public side, because we recognize that just because we own the land doesn't mean that we should restrict people's access to it. And we're excited about some partnerships that are coming online for us that are on both the Carmel side of the property, which is an area that we have never formally expanded over to, as well as partnerships on the Fisher side in the Southwoods. We have some great old growth forests and some beautiful bluffs that look out over the river. And how do we create some nature experiences that are free to the public, that they do get to come in and experience the White River, its majesty, and the artwork that we could put all along there? You know, Mark, you and I have talked for quite some time about the experiences that you develop through the Da Vinci Pursuit, and how can we marry both the art world as well as the history world, and then the beautiful storytelling and interpretation that Conner Prairie has really built its reputation on, and bring all of those together to unify around the White River. And when we think about our master plan for the next 30 years, our goal is to put the White River at the center as its key resource for our future growth. So we have often turned our back on it, and we are now fully embracing this as our future as a museum.
Yeah, and I think one of the wonderful things that you're talking about in that is the idea that all of these forms that we're using for education and interpretation are arts. Yeah. You know, you're using theatrical arts, you're using all the same way, Kevin, when I ride with you, it's more than just hearing the science or the history. But
it's a yarn or two.
It has to be. I mean, you have to have a presentation ability. Yeah. And the same goes for when you guys do sculptural pieces or whatever. It's the extension of yourself telling a story or doing something that I'm sure you teach all the time, both of you, to your students. It's more than just making something.
Right. And I think one of the things with this project was that we didn't want it to be anything about us or an interpretation of us. We wanted to find a way that we could bring something about the river and the culture of that area to an art piece that people could really enjoy. And so I think it's just like you said, is that we have to be very careful that we're not creating sculptures that are self-serving in the sense of, you know, it's not about us as artists. It's about the pieces and how they can enhance their environment. Because if you look at the river, it's already this gorgeous, beautiful place. I mean, when we were out there working, I mean, you know, there were geese on the river, you know, the sun was coming up over the river, and the way the light shone on that and sparkled in the trees. And so we didn't want to create anything that was going to take away from any of that. We just wanted to find a way to add something that could, you know, create an art piece that, you know, enhanced maybe the experience a little bit of what the river was already providing to them.
It also
beat that.
No, it also offers a great opportunity for both of you as teachers and instructors to your students to know that the world of art is changing daily. I mean, there'll be more opportunities as more organizations want to embrace the outdoors, not just have their museums indoors. This is something that your students are learning from as well.
Right, and Nathan did that with his students.
How did you involve them, Nathan?
So I had Maya Johnson. She was part of the actual fabrication team with me. So she went and actually surfaced all the sculptures. So she was able to experience hands-on process and also the installation process for the entire project. So.
And why was that important for her and the other students? What did you see changes in them when they were actively doing that?
Absolutely. She was able to understand what the learning process of going from the classroom and actually going to the real world, of understanding like this thing is actually going to exist beyond potentially 6 months or a year that a normal piece might exist for a student. So this is actually going to be out in the community for them to be able to experience and appreciate, so other people can view it beyond a gallery setting. So
there's also so many more opportunities to create art in different ways, different interactive ways, using the human elements of the voice and touch that Conner Prairie does, but in a more digital sort of way. You guys are teaching new things all the time, Jim.
Yeah. We have digital aspects within our department. We have people who are teaching, you know, animation, so that you can create animated storytelling aspects to things like this, and interactive. So unfortunately, that's beyond me. I'm an old-fashioned traditional guy, but we do have young faculty who are doing these really amazing things with digital technology. And it's just like, Nathan and his understanding of how to use a laser cutter and the water jet to cut the stainless steel and all these things. So
yeah, I think one of the wonderful initiatives, and a part of it comes from the Nina Mason Pulliam Charitable Trust, is that they've convened a lot of different people, mm-hmm. and it's sucked in others, like your department and others, into something where we collaborate mm-hmm. more than we are as separate institutions. And it's normal to want to feel separate when you're founded and you do that. But this kind of thing where you've got a river flowing through all of it, it's a metaphor for us all collaborating around something that is so important to our lives.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it inspires your students, imagining that they have something that's beyond, as you said, Nathan, beyond their life here in class.
Yeah.
That, you know, these things are going to be out there.
And I think University of Indianapolis deserves a real shout out in that regard. You guys technically aren't right on the river as some of our other colleges are, but I've been able to work with Kevin McKelvey, who's mm-hmm. On staff here with creative writing and technical writing, talking to his mm-hmm. classes. They've come out and done hands-on cleanups, approaching some of that some mm-hmm. of those things that are the negative. And I'd like to think that all of our universities will see this opportunity for what's there. And again, I want to stress that what's there isn't just one single thing. The fact that it is so different in its variety and its stretch. You can see pictures on our app, getting back to telling the story digitally, of the river where it comes out of a field in Randolph County. And you can literally step across it in a culvert and then take that and take a look at where the sculptures are downtown, where it's very broad and mm-hmm. been channelized and is an entirely different body of water. And I think that's really great. I don't think we should think of the river as just one thing. It's many things. Mm-hmm. And the goal, I think, that'll be achieved is making those many things of value as a whole to people, particularly to a younger generation. But engaging students with it is great, because many of us have been around doing this for a while. It's going to be not just about, as you're hearing a lot about tourism, it's going to be about people wanting to stay here too, wanting to come and be a part of Indianapolis. Waterways have always been a factor with the establishment of cities, and that's the case with Indianapolis and with Conner Prairie being established long ago. But I think it's very important that we see this as natural infrastructure that's here, that we don't have to quote build and develop. We keep hearing the term activated. Well, the river's activated in a lot of different ways already. Not all of them are good, getting back to that illegal dumping that occurs in the downtown area, but there's a lot of positive things happening, and I applaud bringing younger people to it, bringing families to it, as Conner Prairie is doing, and what we've been able to do as a group, I hope will help with that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think about the river is active, but have we given people enough access to it? I so often see in Hamilton County, and my partner and I moved down here almost 3 years ago now, and so we're just starting to feel like we've got our feet on the ground and truly understand where we live and the community that we're a part of. But so much of Hamilton County restricts access to the river, whether it be just from sort of natural barriers, whether there's woodlands that you can't get to, whether there's a huge landmass like Conner Prairie, 1,046 acres, that's sitting right in the middle that's restricted access for years. And that's where we are with this, is we want to open up those ways. We want to make sure that with the active river that we have, there's enough access points for people who either want to get on it or if they've got challenges with mobility to get onto the river, that they can at least get some access points that would create some view sheds for them so they can understand a lot of the natural majesty.
Yeah, and that'll have to be balanced with private property ownership mm-hmm. in many instances. I know that's one of the considerations in Hamilton County. You have agricultural legacy families that go back five generations and have worked that land and cared for that land over a large period of years, and they're very curious about things that are happening. So it'll be important for those voices to be heard too.
And once again, that's where the history and the science component of this really come into play as well. At Conner Prairie, you guys are constantly having to retell history in a new emerging sense of with young people and
Absolutely.
So they know what was there, why it was there, and why it still should be there, but yeah. be engaging as well.
We always have to, we've got to meet the guests where they are. I'm really proud of what Connor Prairie does from an opening doors perspective. This is our philosophy for how we engage with guests. And we've trained over 1,100 museums across the country on this. And it's no longer about a script that we want to share with you. We instead let you come in and guide the conversation and the questions. And that's how we get to tell different parts of history story each day. It's far less prescribed than you would get at a lot of different museums. And that's what's exciting about the constant innovation and the freedom that we give what we call our interpreters on the ground. They're interpreting history mm-hmm. based on what the guest is showing interest in. Just because we happen to have a silver spoon in the Connor House doesn't mean that I need to tell you everything about that silver spoon. Instead, I'd like to let you explore this home and then come to me and open up with questions that you might have about its history and its place, its relevance from both the past, the present, and the future for us.
Well, I think that gets into interactivity, which is one of our goals of letting people experience the waterway. And if they've got a reason while they're walking in the area where the sculptures are, and they stop and they take a moment and they look at the sculptures, then they're going to see something else too. They're going to see some element of nature there that they hadn't seen before, including the bald eagle that occasionally chases the osprey right down there in the area that you're talking about. That's a for sure. And there's fish species down there that I know for a fact, being involved with Friends of White River since 1985, that weren't there. So there's things emerge. And I think, again, it gets back to that variety. Not everything appeals to everyone. It'd be a pretty dull world if it did. Mm-hmm. And there's a balance of having too many people in one place at one time, too. So all those things are things that will be things to think about as we get excited about the potential, but move our way into it thoughtfully and respectfully.
Mm-hmm. Because I know when you're on the river, sometimes you completely forget that you are in Indiana on a river.
Absolutely.
You really feel like you're in a whole different world. And so that does open up a whole different way of thinking for people, just as when you go to see the river fish sculptures, you're taking in the nature and everything, and then you turn around and you see the city skyline, and you see the industry, and you see the roads, and you see just how close we are as human beings and how everything that we do really affects our water that maybe we never thought about before.
Yeah, I want to pick up that thread for just a minute and talk a little bit about the partnerships Connor Prairie has been able to form with Hamilton Southeastern Schools and the development of our preschool on the prairie. And these are incredibly relevant to this conversation because we wanted to think about how we are creating the next generation of stewards of our land and our rivers. And for so long, fourth graders were coming to Connor Prairie for perhaps a four-hour field trip in one day. Well, we wanted to transform that. And so we opened up about $5 million worth of capital improvements last year. And one of those was a space for us to house a resident teacher from Hamilton Southeastern Schools so that it's no longer a four-hour field trip, it's a four-day field trip. Students going through the fourth grade come at two different times of the season, and they're not kept in a building looking at nature, no matter what the weather is, rain, shine, whether you've got a foot of snow on the ground, an ice storm coming through, they come equipped to get outside and to be in nature and to be on the river because we know that there is just such an appreciation that happens out there and a child's learning to understand that they are connected to that and they have a hand in its preservation and conservation moving forward. So we're really excited about these opportunities to not just have people come for a couple hours, but to immerse them in the natural beauty that is, you know, over 1,000 acres of land in the middle of Hamilton County, where there's so much development happening and butting right up against us.
We're making progress, and it's good. And today we are talking about the art, the science, and the history of the White River. And we want to remind you that this program is made possible by the generosity of an anonymous donor who supports the Da Vinci Pursuit's mission of creating a museum without walls so that artists, scientists, and the community can all come together for unique activities and conversations. We're going to take another break and then continue our conversation. Stay with us. Mm-hmm.
Hi, this is Tony Morris. Join me for an hour of some of the best music for guitar on Classical Guitar Alive. Each week we explore a wide variety of music with guitar, and you'll also hear interviews with many of the world's foremost performers and composers. That's each week on Classical Guitar Alive.
Saturday mornings at 5 on WICR The Diamond.
Dave Baghdad, host of The Kitchen Party Kaylee. I hope you'll join me every Sunday at 10 p.m. for the best music from Ireland, Scotland, Canada, and the U.S. The Kitchen Party Kaylee, Celtic music from across the globe and across town.
Join us for the University of Indianapolis Faculty Artists Series on Saturday afternoons at 2 o'clock. Host Michael Toulouse brings you his fine commentary as we showcase faculty and visiting artists performing exceptional concerts and recitals from the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center on the University of Indianapolis campus. That's the University of Indianapolis Faculty Artist Series, Saturdays at 2 p.m. on 88.7 WICR.
Hello, Indiana. This is Dr. Laura Merrifield Wilson, host of Positively Politics. I'd like to invite you to join our conversation on the current issues and events in politics with the experts who know them best. Every Saturday morning here on WICR at 11:30, we break down the sometimes negative and often complicated world of politics in a nonpartisan, straightforward, and educationally rooted way. You won't want to miss the discussion on Positively Politics Saturday morning at 11:30 right here on The Diamond.
Welcome back, and we're talking about art, science, and history along the White River. When we left, we had a little bit of a conversation about science, and the show is Art and Science. So one of the interesting things is the science that we have is changing, just like the history is changing. And we understand more than we ever have about urban environments. But, you know, we didn't even start studying that until the 60s or 70s. We studied nature in pristine areas. And urban studies of ecology and the environment, they didn't start till we started having things like rivers lighting on fire, as the Cuyahoga River did.
1969.
And so that spawned a new era of science and a new look at that. And so when we think about that, we have to change our ways of thinking how we use it. And so, Kevin, you were talking about, I think we are getting new generations of institutions, much like Connor Prairie, new generations of even developers who are seeing that clear-cutting all everything down to the river is not wise. And even though we might like beautiful green grass going down there, that is not the way that that entire ecosystem is working or how it works in an urban setting. So I was curious, from all of you, how do you feel that evolving nature of understanding the river? How is that informing all of you in your work, as we understand more about the ecology and that there are animals living there and that animals move there? These are corridors of movement. How does that inform your work?
There's kind of a spin on that I'll add in that is being talked about in conjunction with the White River Vision Plan, and it's part of the movement on rivers nationwide. And that is, as we look at these ways to bring more people to the waterways and value them and they become more attractive, it's a social concern. Are we creating what's going to result in, used to be called gentrification, now it's called displacement. You take the areas where the sculptures are located. Hawville is now seen as a disadvantaged community. It was at one point in time a thriving Slovenian community, Irish community. I think we need to think carefully about preserving some of the heritages of those communities that are along there. There's a science to that. It's not a hard science per se, necessarily connected with landscaping, a more friendly landscaping. But we are seeing some of that with golf courses and other things. And we're even seeing, in the case of Indianapolis, a golf course that, because golf as a sport is suffering from some declines, is going to be created into a nature park if that's realized with Riverside Park downtown.
You know, it's so fascinating you bring up the golf course. Conner Prairie is uniquely positioned in the fact that we actually own Prairie View Golf Course. And so, Mark, to your question of how are we thinking about this, how is it affecting our daily business practices, one of our four strategic imperatives is sustainability of resources, river, and revenue. So we're not just looking at the financial sustainability of the organization. We're looking at the land sustainability and specifically the river sustainability on our property. And, you know, this year is the 50th anniversary of Earth Day that we're really excited about as a museum when it comes to an educational perspective and opportunity to share a lot of this. And Conner Prairie will be releasing its first ever sustainability plan. And that means that it's time for us to start walking the walk. Right? We have a lot of opportunities to talk the talk right now, but we've got to turn the lens and the mirror back on ourselves. And part of that comes from conversations with our partners at the golf course. We don't operate that as an organization. We own the land and we're in a long-term lease agreement with our good partners over there at Prairie View. But we've got to talk to them a little bit about what sort of chemicals are they using at the golf course, because this is one river that runs for all of us. And if Conner Prairie is going to be talking about the best agricultural practices that should be adopted by farmers, and if we're going to be installing wetlands just north of Prairie View Golf Course, we want to know that things aren't just going to change when we get about 3 miles down the river to their land. And how is that affecting the river's health? So for us, from our perspective of business practices and what we're trying to do from a sustainability perspective, the river is at its core and the science of our understanding of how we're all affecting it, whether it be at home with fertilization of our yards, whether it be as an organization that is, you know, cutting the grasses on 1,046 acres and the practices there of everything from what are we doing with the grass once it's cut? Are we cutting to the right levels? What about the pond that we have on the property? How is that affecting the river and its resources? So it's at the core of every decision we're making right now.
Yeah, and I would think, Jim and Nathan, you know, what's critical here along that line is with your students and getting art students to understand what sustainability is and by the projects that they do and how they bring forth beauty, help somebody see something that other people don't see. So when I was talking about that, how do you feel that as both teaching artists but also practicing artists?
Well, I think there's two things there. There's the public view of art, and then there's the sort of the studio view of art. So as we work with students who are, and I think we talked about this a little bit before, creating works that are more about themselves and about their personal expression, that's a completely different thing than we're talking about artwork for the public view. You know, as we're talking about, you know, you have to be, with Hallville, you have to be cognizant and aware of those communities and create work that, you know, that works with them and not just simply we're creating this piece and we're sticking it in your neighborhood and here you go, like it or not. So we have to create pieces that, you know, will further the communities in which the work is going into. And that's one thing when we thought about the sculpture of the Riverfish is that we didn't want to create a sculpture that was just about us and our personal exploration of sculpture, because that wouldn't have said anything about the community that was in, the environment that was going to be in. And so you really have to be thinking about what's going to work for the community in which you're placing the work. Or if we're placing it along the river, is it working with that environment or not working with that environment? Because we don't want to just throw a piece out there that glorifies us as artists, because that does nothing for the community or the environment that it's in.
Yeah, and I think that's where the science and the history inform us.
Right.
So they help us when we look back. I know Conner Prairie, you look back and you have an interesting piece of history by a family who founded that on your property.
Yeah, and I think it's fascinating to think about, assuming you're alluding to the Chinese house maybe, because this is an opportunity for us to step into the story, to step into history, but also have this beautiful appreciation for Chinese art, because this home that Mark is alluding to is just off of Allisonville Road, and it's built in 1901 by the Atkins family and then taken over by the Lilly family and used as a summer house, but also for business retreats by Eli, Bridge Club for Ruth. And it was through a fascination with Chinese art and really the Chinese culture as Eli Lilly was developing his own personal hobbies and understanding that as a global businessman, he had to both understand not just the people, but their culture and their value systems as well in order to expand his business. And so he transformed this summer home from 1901 into the Chinese house. And we just went through a beautiful restoration of this that opened up the bluffs onto the White River. And the name is appropriate because we are truly on a bluff looking over the White River, and it's at one of the southernmost parts of our property. So you get to step into a home built in the 1900s, surrounded by the second growth forest right on the river, where you're looking at Chinese art ceilings that were painted that are representing different characters in Chinese culture that represent protection from the northeast, south, and west. And then you get to step into a brand new state-of-the-art facility that we opened in partnership with the Rich Charles that really bookends the south part of our property and gives people a viewpoint, again, that that view of the watershed, and to build that appreciation. So it's really this beautiful blend of art, of history, and of science, because we get to host things like the Indiana Water Forum in the Bluffs. We open this location up not just to the wedding parties that are interested in having a beautiful, serene location, but to those that want to educate and want to be on the river. This is a beautiful place to do it and to blend all of those things together. Our CEO, Norman, doesn't just call it STEM education anymore. It's histemic, right? There is a history to all of this. And so we're really excited about creating this new blend of history and STEM and art into one, so that we can educate this next generation.
That's really great. I'm always fond of saying it's just really good education. We can get rid of all the letters let's have really good education.
Learn by doing.
Exactly.
Nathan, you are relatively new to Indiana too, correct? You haven't lived here very long.
Correct, yes.
And I believe you have a young daughter?
Yes,
is that right?
I do, yeah.
So as an artist and creating this piece, was this the first time you've ever really been that close to the White River to
yeah,
see
it, was,
it and to
it
feel
it?
Yeah,
it was my first experience with the White River.
Wow.
Yes.
And how did that make you feel, and what has that left in your mind and for your future practice, too?
Well, my first impression of the river, the location that we were able to be at was actually really beautiful. Like this scene, like the scenery, seeing the city of what we were talking about before, of having like this this urban environment, but also this very rural feel of having this water, this watershed. We have the trees that are growing behind it, but we had I just really appreciate that moment to being able to see nature with the cityscape. So I think that was a really beautiful moment for me to be able to experience and enjoy. Obviously, we were out there for several days, for several weeks on end, to be able to get this project finalized. But it was a really enjoyable moment to be able to be out there and be out in nature. That's not my personal practice of making art. It's usually within the gallery setting for how I operate as my profession or my research that I do. But as far as being out in the public realm was really a powerful moment for me.
What are you going to take from that experience as you continue to make new art?
I think it's just finding more opportunities to be able to find those locations to be able to highlight, and not necessarily take over, but just add to be able to heighten the viewer's experience, to be able to just appreciate those places in a different light, in a different way.
And with a young daughter, too, you probably are thinking about her future as well.
Absolutely, for her to be able to see the world in a different way. Absolutely.
So this exactly goes back to the heart of what we've been talking about, and that is just that getting people to go near the river, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. It's more than turning your backs; it's getting people to go down
and not just once.
Not mm-hmm. just once. And what you said, Kevin, was so important, and that is, it's not one river; it's very diverse all the way along. Everything is totally different between locations, even in Hamilton County and other parts of Marion County.
Even farther north of Hamilton County.
5 miles apart in
Indianapolis. You can walk less than a mile and have it completely change in terms of what's there. And so it becomes, I think, very exciting for people to be able to get reconnected to what's there. Less so than some of our developers want to say, which is it needs to be activated, which I always hate, because to me that means something bad. I usually think that you don't need to activate what's already there. You just need to be able to connect people to what's already there.
You know, make sure, at least make sure you value what's already there.
You got to value it first, and then you've got to connect people.
And if you activate it, it's got to be respectfully.
It does.
Whether it's with art, residential development that shouldn't occur right along the river because of flooding, which is a whole other historical thing. Right.
No, and now what I love about each one of your organizations is that you're all taking the time to do what I think is the slow learning, because this process is not fast. So if we work with the neighborhood or we work with people, we can't just descend on them and expect that because we want to get something as a piece of art done, we want to have our art up in 6 months. That we can do that.
Right.
Sometimes the time frame is very different. Same way with Conner Prairie, you're working with people. There's a lot of learning that has to go on. So I always think of this as a slow process. Mm-hmm. And that's anti-developers and particularly mayors, most mayors only have 4 years to give us. And so they want something to happen in that four-year period. But often it's much longer work than that.
Well, yeah, and I think that White River Vision Plan is just a starting point, too.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of people think that's it, and that's the way it's going to be. But if you really look at it and read it, it really needs to just be a starting point.
It's very much just a starting point, and some of it has already changed since the vision plan was in place. A dam that had historical significance, a breach 2 years ago, and that was included as a feature in the plan. That now plans are fluid; they are dynamic, especially when they're along
it's
the
Mother
river.
Nature. She's in charge. Environmentally, how is the health of the river right now, Kevin?
Environmentally, the river is steadily improving, and that goes back to a time period that was mentioned with the Cuyahoga River catching on fire in 1969. I still remember that. I still remember the first Earth Day quite well, and I'm glad to see that we've come a ways, but that doesn't mean that we still don't have a long way to go, and that we can't say, well, things are better, and we don't have to work to make them better. Everything we do impacts the river and the waterway that we're built on, and we're still finding that people don't know what the term watershed means, and that's mm-hmm. not just talking about White River and immediate to its banks. That's the huge area of central Indiana that all these other tributaries drain into that affect that main artery, if you will. We'll continue to see White River improve environmentally. We'll continue to have an impact on it as people, and I hope more of those impacts are positive than they're negative. Heightened awareness is certainly a key factor in that, and the fact that media and we're having opportunity to talk on shows like this is an important component. So thanks for that.
And I think too, all our organizations are really been here for the long haul. I mean, UIndy's over 100 years old. Conner Prairie.
Hundreds years old.
And then 50 years old, right? Yeah. And so it's not like, you know, it's like you said, we're not here for the next 4 years and what we can get done. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Nathan's a young guy. He's going to be here for a very long time, and he's, you know, going to be creating lots of cool artwork. And so we're here, too, for the long haul to be participating in the community and what we can do to enhance it from our end, just like everyone else is trying to do the same thing.
And that's what's called stewardship. And
yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, it is, exactly.
It doesn't involve just one single type of person, one personification. Stewardship can be institutional, can be individual. Mm-hmm. But stewardship is key to having what nature has given us. Our natural infrastructure is what I call it.
A couple minutes left here. I want to ask each of you just briefly, if you have a favorite place on the river or a favorite piece of art on the river, to share it with our listeners? Anybody can start.
I'll give you one that relates to art, and it's the site of our annual meeting for the last 2 years, the Indianapolis Art Center. But one of the reasons for that is personal. I got married, and my wife and I got married on the banks of White River and left by canoe there. One of the first events
that's
there.
That's great.
And
that's kind of a hidden gem there at the Indianapolis Art Center in Broad Ripple, back on the river. Andy?
Yeah, for me, it's a hidden part of Conner Prairie's property, and it's just off of River Road as you're coming south from 146th Street. And, you know, you go by Lily's farm manager's office there, and you see the silo that's part of the church that actually is a historic grain mm-hmm. silo that was mm-hmm. part of Conner Prairie Farms when Eli Lilly was raising horse and cattle and Ossabaw hogs. And so there's some real history over there that I think people don't necessarily understand. They think there might just be some old decrepit buildings, but we are actively pursuing the restoration and really just the saving of those. But I have the unique privilege of being able to take a lot of people on tours of that side of the property as we do what we call a drip campaign of information about our master plan to get people excited about what we're doing. And so I get to head over there every once in a while and sneak back past the property limits and right onto the river, and it's within a floodplain. And as you walk down, every time I go over, it's something different. Whether there's just been a deposit of sediments and sand, perhaps, or whether it's dry and I'm looking at a family of deer that are eating some of the fresh berries that may have been pushed over. But
the best
there's
way
really
to see
beautiful
it
watersheds
year round.
I just love it. Yeah,
Nathan?
Well, obviously, with limited experience, I just look forward to be able to experience more opportunities. So being able to go to Conner Prairie and go to be able to just explore other places to be able to see the river and see the wildlife.
And Jim?
Mine might be a little different. I actually live on a tributary that goes into the White River down in Morgan County. So I've actually carried a canoe to the back of my property and dropped it into the creek and gone right out to the White River.
White Lick?
Stotts Creek.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and then my kids and I have canoed and kayaked White River, so down in Morgan County. So, I mean, we have bald eagles that come up the creek from the river into our backyard.
And that's so, back to this idea of one river.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a very unique river in that the White is completely contained in the state,
mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting because most are shared by other states. So, again, that's the call for many, many partners.
It is. And we want to thank all of you guys for being here, Kevin, Andrew, Jim, and Nathan, and for our listeners at home. And remember, there are other ways to learn more about
Absolutely.
Our guests and our projects, Mark.
You'll find pictures of their projects and those of our guests on the website, thedavincipursuit.com, where we create museums without walls so artists, scientists, and community can come together to enjoy unique activities and conversations.
So get out there and explore the
Absolutely.
River. Until then, I'm Jill Dittmeyer.
And I'm Mark Kiesling, reminding you to
stay curious.
Thank you for listening to She Says Art and He Says Science. You can listen to the full show podcast on WICRonline.org, as well as on thedavincipursuit.com. Or you could join Jill Dittmeyer and Mark Kiesling every Saturday live on a different kind of public radio, 88.7 WICR.